Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Slash Filmcast After Dark, the after show for the Slash Filmcast. This week's Slash Filmcast After Dark is a little bit different. We got a follow-up to our top 10 episodes. We got special categories for movies that didn't quite make it into our top 10 or honorable mentions. Now, I do want to acknowledge that before we get to this segment, these questions, these categories, have been brazenly ripped off from another film podcast, and that is the Film Spotting SVU podcast hosted by Matt Singer and Allison Wilmore, RIP. I love that podcast. But they used to do these things called the Svoovies, because it's called Film Spotting SVU. And they would put together these kind of interesting other categories for movies from the year 2020. And so I thought, let's do this for the show. It's gone over pretty well. And because we were running pretty long on the episode, I thought, let's split it off into the After Dark so you can enjoy it separately. But I would say to get the most out of this, you got to listen to our top 10 episode, which came out earlier this week. Check that out. Then tune into this episode for our special categories for the movies of 2020.
We should also thank patrons who are listening to this as a patron benefit. We are so grateful that you support us and our show at patreon.com/filmpodcast.
Yes. And this is at this point, the last Patreon-specific episode that's going to be released on the main feed. So if you have not made the jump to patreon.com/filmpodcast and you want to continue to enjoy these After Darks, make sure you head on over to patreon.com/filmpodcast and pull the trigger. Okay, so let's get to special categories. Let's start with the following category. Movie they didn't get. Now, this is kind of a stand-in for underrated movie. Now, I also want to say every year when we do this, I want to call out underrated can mean a lot of things. It is incredibly subjective. It can mean didn't make enough money at the box office. It can mean I didn't see enough people tweeting about it. It can mean Rotten Tomato score is too low. It can literally mean anything. So the category is virtually.
That's why it's better that we use the they didn't get thing that we ripped off, obviously, but I think it's such a better phrasing because I think it's clearer to indicate, hey, this is a movie I care about, but other people didn't seem to appreciate it or get it the way I did, you know?
Indeed. Indeed. Mm-hmm. So Jeff, let's start with you. What's a movie they didn't get? You liked it. They didn't get it, though.
I loved this movie, and it almost made my top 10. I didn't make it an honorable mention because it felt so perfect in this category of a movie that they didn't get. And it's called Scare Me, which is a movie that was on Shudder. It is ostensibly a horror movie, although not really. It's more of this storytelling, this exploration of storytelling. And it is a very small scale film. It's basically three characters, mostly two characters, stuck inside a cabin, telling each other scary stories. And, you know, it evokes for me, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, which I love, which I make a show about. It evokes language and theater. It is basically like it's not improvised, it's a written film, but it feels like the characters are improvising a story, but they get the benefit of awesome sound design along with it and cool camera angles. I just adored this movie. I loved its use of language, the way it told the stories, the way the actors acted them out and personified, told these, you know, weaving a yarn, these rip-roaring narratives that are, it's just words. It's just people in a cabin telling each other stories. It's not cutting to the story and seeing it all acted out. It's just people saying words to each other. And I love movies like that. My favorite movie of all time is My Dinner with Andre. So, you know, I'm into just language and people and actors acting. Scare Me was fantastic. And I know almost no one else that liked it. So it is very much a movie for me that I loved that they did not get.
I actually watched this on Shudder on your recommendation. And I liked some things about it, but ultimately, overall, the movie didn't work for me. So I'm one of they. I am they. Yeah. I be they. Devendra Hardar, do you have a movie they didn't get?
You know, I kind of had a hard time finding something for this category just because, I don't know, things I like this year seemed like everybody kind of agreed. One I'll point out.
Yeah. Basically, you liked everything, like everyone respected your amazing opinion.
Da Vinci's got his finger on the pulse of mainstream opinion.
I know what's up.
You know what the cool kids are doing on the streets.
Like, that's the thing. I can't think of something I'm annoyed with. The one thing I can kind of point to is maybe The Old Guard. And this is a movie, it's well-reviewed. It's 80% Rotten Tomatoes. I talked to a lot of people that like it. But I've also, you know, talked to folks who look at it as just another dumb Netflix action movie. And I don't think that's the case at all. Because this is a movie that it does, you know, it's based on a comic. It kind of feels like a comic book movie at times. And I love what Gina Prince-Bythewood does with these characters. Because you get a sense that, oh, these people have fought together for thousands of years, and they kind of talk about this history, and they talk about the life of being basically an immortal and how difficult and shitty that can be, but also, you know, the relationships and the kind of memories you can have from doing that. I just love so much about the texture of this movie, and I love the action as well. Like, we talked about this in our review. There are some things that are probably a little too flowery, you know, that probably wouldn't fit into like a high quality Hong Kong action movie or something, but I think it does a lot of great things. There are definitely some great teamwork choreography I see here. And yeah, this is a great movie about teams and how you can kind of succeed together. And I found a lot to love in that.
Well, proving that these, you know, proving my statement made moments ago about how these categories are completely arbitrary.
Yeah,
this is in my category of movie we didn't get. which is a movie that has an 80% plus on Rotten
Tomatoes. I was directing right at you once again.
Once like, again, yeah. David is they.
I am they. And this is a movie that was praised to high heaven online. And I didn't hate it or anything. I thought it was fine. It's completely fine. The action scenes are fine. The world building is fine. Charlize Theron is fine. It's not bad, but it just is a movie that really I felt like it did not light my world on fire. But respect that a lot of people, other people enjoyed it. But that is the movie I didn't get. Mm-hmm. So you know, one person's trash, another person's treasure is purpose of these categories.
Okay. Beauty of opinions.
Beauty of opinions. Okay, guys, I'm gonna put something weird on this one. Okay, uh-huh. I'm gonna put a movie that you probably don't even know came out this year.
Yeah, was it a screener that you got? And, didn't share with us.
They didn't get it because nobody else has seen it.
Okay, I'm gonna say a movie they didn't get is Underwater.
I've been meaning to see this just because you spoke so positively about it.
A lot of folks are praising it. Yeah.
The William Eubank science fiction action horror film that stars Kristen Stewart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is like a mid-budget sci-fi film. It's like around $50 million budget. A movie that I don't like, my guess is a movie like this will never be made again. Maybe once a year, once every 6 months, a movie like this will be made. But like this feels
kind of like a Netflix movie, to be honest. But yeah, okay.
Yeah, but like, I would argue if you look at this and compare it to a Netflix movie, like mm-hmm. the difference is obvious. Like I just think the production value is really high.
Sure, sure.
And you know, I know this is shocking for a movie called Underwater, but it's a movie that takes place entirely underwater. It's hard to shoot underwater and make it look interesting and make it look real, mm-hmm. And not actively be subjecting your actors to danger. And I feel like this movie accomplished that. This has a 47% Rotten Tomatoes. It's not a movie that I'm like, oh, it's my top 10. Like, how dare you guys not acknowledge it? But it's a movie that I like, hey, this is a lot of fun. It's a really well-made genre film. Yeah. And I think that like, people didn't get it. It came out in January, which is typically, you know, one of the dump months where like bad movies are released. But I think, it's kind of like, you know, it reminds me of like Crawl, another movie that came out like last year.
Sure.
Which I know a
lot more people like really dug. Yeah.
Right. It's like a sleeper horror hit or a sleeper horror film that's like pretty good. But that's a movie they didn't get is Underwater. I thought it was solid and mm-hmm. It really didn't, I mean, it made $40 million, which is not bad at all, but certainly did not get its due, in my opinion. So anyway,
you know what's fun, Dave? It's really fun to see you praise Underwater and just shit on the Old Guard. Just shit on it.
That is pretty funny.
I don't think I shit on anything, but that's just me. Anyway, Underwater, by the way, streaming right now on HBO Max. So
I've been meaning to. I've seen it pop up on my feed or whatever they call it. You know, my homepage a couple of times. Like now on HBO Max, and I keep remembering you praising it. Maybe this will be the thing that puts me over the top.
It's pretty good. It's not
like 80 minutes, right? It's not even that long, right?
Yeah.
It's very short. Yeah. This was the movie that dared to cast TJ Miller once again after all his garbage. Yeah. So I think that was maybe a thing holding it back. Yeah.
Let me guess. He plays a wry, wisecracking guy who maybe underestimates the danger that is happening around him. Sorry.
There was also, by the way, there's a movie that I wanted to watch that might have been on my top 10, that might have also been in this category, which would have been Swallow. You guys heard of this movie, Swallow? I didn't have a chance to watch it. I heard this movie is really underrated. I'm looking forward to checking it out, but this is also something I was thinking of watching that might make it on this list. And
as
finally,
you were mainlining everything for this year. Yeah.
As I was mainlining everything. Also, I've heard this movie make it onto people's underrated list is Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always.
Yes.
Which is a movie
I've seen that on lots of top 10s. Yeah.
I actually watched it in preparation for my top 10. It did not make my top 10, but it is a good slow burn drama that obviously shows a character going through something that many people go through, but shows it in a way that we don't often see on screen. And so I think it's good. It's good. It is also streaming on HBO Max, by the way. So Never, Rarely, Sometimes, Always, and Underwater, and Swallow. Those are the movies I mentioned. Okay. Movie we didn't get. I've already listed The Old Guard. I'm also going to put bonus Queen's Gambit on there, but that's a TV show.
It's not a movie.
Enough! Yeah. We know! How dare you. We don't care about the Queen's Gambit, Dave. It's okay. It's okay.
Movie we didn't get, Jeff Cannata.
By the way, if you had Dave mentions Queen's Gambit on your 2021 bingo card,
yeah,
you win.
Easy bingo.
I have, sadly, quite a few that fit into this category. A movie that I didn't get that everybody else seems to. Yep. In fact, I'll add one more to this list based on the top 10s that you guys gave. I'm going to put The Invisible Man on there because I don't understand how it made both of your top 10s. There's something really cool about that movie,
perfect movie, Jeff.
I didn't feel like it was perfect. I didn't not enjoy it. I enjoyed it. I just don't get the fawning love of it. But that's exactly what this category is all about. Couple of others. Relic, which you guys know I did not care for, and both of you really liked. And I think a lot of people liked. And another movie that did not work for me, Shirley. I've seen on a number of top 10 lists around the internet and did not like. So both of the Elizabeth Moss movies, I guess, I just didn't work for me.
Wow, what a hater.
I apologize. I think she's amazing, but neither of those.
I'm calling the Scientology cops. Yeah.
Yeah.
We got this amazing listener email about Relic that
didn't we read it already?
Mm-hmm. I don't think I read it on the air. I'm pretty sure I forwarded it to you guys. I intended to read it. I never read it on the air. But to me, this email that we received, can I read this, Jeff? Is it okay?
Make me feel even worse that I didn't like the movie, but
okay. So in order to read this, I don't think I ever read this email because it requires me to spoil Relic. So that's why I never read it. Go ahead.
I think you did, but okay. Maybe you didn't. It's possible.
Okay. All right. Well, sorry if you're reading, if you're hearing this twice, but I'm almost certain I didn't because in my mind, I'm like, I got to read this email sometime and I never did. But anyway, someone will write it and prove me wrong, but
or me,
this email comes into /filmcast@gmail.com. And in order to read this email, I need to spoil Relic. So if you haven't seen Relic, skip forward by 2 minutes. But before I read this email, the ending of Relic, right? Basically, this character's mother has dementia, is kind of acting out, and is frightening to everyone. And the final scene of Relic, all her like skin comes off, and she's just this kind of withered woman, you know, who's like really helpless. And this email really put it together for me. This person writes in, they want to be anonymous. So they write in, "Hi guys, first time writing to the show. Since you guys are reviewing Relic, I wanted to see it so I could be in on the conversation. I did not know anything going in besides the poster. I thought I was in for a spooky short and fun horror movie. To my surprise, I ended up sobbing for an hour afterwards. I was not expecting to relate to this movie on such a deep and personal level. I grew up in a rough family with an abusive father. After coming to America, my mother was able to separate from my father when I was younger. Unfortunately, my elder siblings and mother took most of the abuse, and it left a toll on my family. Growing up with the remains of what was left in my father's wake, life was very difficult. After high school, I moved to Washington to try and start something for myself and maybe build something here for my mother and my siblings. My mother became very ill and had to have open heart surgery. No one in my family could take care of her needs because they were going through their own problems with drug addiction and alcoholism, things they leaned on to cope. So I decided to take up the task. I left my job and life to take care of my mother as she took care of us. I spent many days and weeks at the hospital and years trying to get her back on her feet. We fought and had arguments, bouts of anger she would have with me, and the stories of things my father did. We bled together through the rough times with tensions at a constant high, but we were together and we had each other. Watching the movie, Relic, I recognized my mother in Edna. I remember carrying my mother up a flight of stairs to our apartment, laying her down on her bed, and staying with her when she was scared and uncertain of the next struggles. The stigma of a divorced wife had always lingered for my relatives, which was always in the air at family gatherings. Everyone saw her as a family wrecker, while my father came away with a reputation untarnished because of the patriarchal structure of our culture, leaving my mother in a bad mental state with bouts of self-harm. So everyone saw my mother as a monster that was just now a weight on my siblings and I. They could not see the woman underneath that had been through so much. The person everyone avoided and shunned that I would gladly lay beside. I was so moved I had to send this email in to thank you guys for getting me to see this movie. It really fucked me up cathartically. Things are better now many years later. Love the show. Thanks for everything."
Wow.
Beautiful and moving. And it makes me feel even worse for not connecting to the movie, but I'm glad others did. I mean, this is why it's in this category,
you,
right?
Jeff? How dare
but,
you?
Yeah,
that's but, why, but, that's yeah, why this ahead. Category is best not expressed as overrated,
right.
More it's as we didn't get it. I didn't connect to it that way.
I honestly didn't connect to it that way until this email. You know, yeah. Like I thought the movie was like, oh yeah, that's pretty good horror film. But then when you watch that last scene in Relic, and you see this mother, like basically this person who to other people is a monster, you see them for who they really are, which is just this weakened, withered husk of a person who's like clinging on to their humanity. And yeah, like watching that last scene, reading this email, it really kind of unlocked it for me. So thank you, listener out there, anonymous listener who wrote this email in. Thanks for, I also asked their permission to share it on the air and they granted it. So thank you for that as well. But that's Relic. That's movie Jeff didn't get. And I think that's all of our movies we didn't get.
No, I didn't talk about mine, the one I didn't get.
Oh, go ahead, Devendra.
I think you guys could probably guess. But for me, it's The Trial of the Chicago 7. This movie sits at 90% on Rotten Tomatoes, 91% audience score. And, you know, I'm seeing it pop up on top 10 lists and everything. And I can understand liking this movie. It's perfectly fine to use the fine phrase that Dave is using. You know, like it's fine. It's a perfectly fine, you know, court film. But I think it makes me angry because so much of it is just so utterly toothless, right? This movie really comes down to like the emotional catharsis of this movie is the realization that, you know, somebody didn't mean the words they said in the way they said it. It's such an Aaron Sorkin thing to kind of hinge the critical moment of the movie, right, on this thing. This movie kind of annoys me in so many ways, but also I think a lot of the performances in this thing are just not great. I don't know what Eddie Redmayne is doing in this, but he looks like an absolute alien pretending to be an American. And Sacha Baron Cohen's Chicago accent. Like, I could never really get into this movie because of these performances. And also, I like Aaron Sorkin. I like him just fine. But I think, especially as a director, maybe he needs a little help, like when it comes to crafting these narratives, because Molly's Game was really cool for a while. I feel like that movie just went on way too long, and like he didn't know how to like hold himself in. I think he's got a great movie. Like I think he has the potential to direct a truly great movie someday. And maybe, I don't know, maybe if like somebody, like he'll listen to people with script notes or something. But I just think so much of this movie feels completely misguided and doesn't actually say much about the like resistance movement of that time. Like, there's so much more this movie can say. And instead of being really strong-willed about it and like trying to give us like an actual portrayal of what's happening, instead he'll do the thing where the, you know, the prosecutor also has his moments of being a good guy, when in that case, from what we've seen and from what history can tell us, the system was not good to these people, and especially, you know, the one black person who was a part of this trial. So a lot, this movie just disappointed me. And then when I saw something like Mangrove, I'm like, this is it. This is why you make a movie about, you know, about a famous trial, about people who were protesting and people who were standing against injustice. I just feel like Trial Chicago 7 feels like somebody cosplaying, you know, a resistance fighter or something.
I think you're being extremely harsh on this film, is how I feel about it. I mean, I think that I
let me be so harsh because everybody else loves it. Yeah.
I mean, a couple of things. I think Eddie Redmayne is actually good in this movie. I don't know what you're coming on him about. That was, so I will say Sacha Baron Cohen, by the way, is doing a Bostonian accent in this film.
Sure.
So the fact that you, but I don't blame you for not knowing.
It's not
that.
A great accent either. Like, it's not, yeah. I don't know what he's going for, and I don't, the whole stand-up bit thing he's doing, like so much of the structure of this movie.
Yeah, the structure is what weird. I will say the structure is weird because you start out in the perspective of the Joseph Gordon-Levitt character, and you're like, "Oh, we're going to be with Joseph Gordon-Levitt this whole time."
Is the good
like,
guy,
and then,
right?
And then it completely shifts perspective. It shifts perspective like five times during the course of the movie. I think it does try to do too much. It didn't make my top 10. I enjoyed it when I watched it, and then it kind of lessened upon reconsideration. But I do think you're being too harsh on it. And of course, Jeff, you love this movie. It was an honorable mention for you, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Devendra's, you know, entitled to his perspective on it. I had a lot of fun with these characters, and I thought that, I mean, fun, I guess, is a dumb word to use there, but
it is certainly entertaining.
I love the exchanges. All of the, you know, it's fun. Aaron Sorkin, you know, I always describe his movies as being action movies, and instead of car chases and explosions, you have turns of phrase. And I'm a sucker for that stuff. I dig it. And I think there's plenty of it here. And I think, you know, I didn't find the faults that you find in it. I can see where you're coming from on some of it, but I agree with Dave that I think it struck a chord in you that is
it definitely did. Do you guys remember Jeremy Strong in this movie? What is happening?
Yeah. That's pretty rough. Jeff, I am legit curious though about your thoughts on Mangrove.
I want to see it. I feel bad. I wish that I'd watched that instead of Lover's Rock. I liked Lover's Rock a lot. I don't get me wrong, but it seems to be more of the movie that would have potentially made my list.
Because I think for me and Devendra, it's just like, wow, this movie just like Mangrove just feels so much more essential.
Well, it's
Trial of Chicago 7.
It's an angry, like it's a movie that is making a statement, right? A very clear statement about what happened and what these people stood for.
You're making me defend Trial of Chicago 7, but like Trial of Chicago 7 also has stuff to say. It is not as essential. It is not as important as Mangrove. It is about progressivism and like the attitude, like what are the best techniques that progressivism can take, and like the contrast between the Sacha Baron Cohen character and the Eddie Redmayne character. Like it's largely about that. Now, that is less of an important issue, in my opinion, than what Mangrove tackles. But it's not about nothing. I think you're underselling.
I think what annoys me, by the way, though, is that didn't exist. That actual this statement Aaron Sorkin is making about these different styles of progressivism, it is, you know, just having read up a bit more about it. Like it seems like he definitely made a play about him trying to make a statement about using the situation to make his own statements, which is fine. It's totally fine, but I think it gets so swept up in the Aaron
Sorkinism. You can say it's not a message that resonated with you, and I think that's completely fine. But it didn't have no message, so I don't want to.
It certainly didn't have no message. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So, anyway, that's Trial of Chicago 7. Obviously, a movie that pretty contentious, and that's okay. That's okay. But those are movies we didn't get. Okay, let's talk about most disappointing movie of 2020. Now, last year, I went back and listened to our top movies of 2020, 2019 episode, and we all had the most disappointing movie, like the same movie for most disappointing movie. Do you guys remember what that was?
No.
I don't remember anything from 2019, Dave.
Yeah, yeah. It's...
was that in our 500th episode?
It was interesting. Yeah, good one. It was interesting because when I brought up the category, most disappointing movie, all three of us knew exactly what it was. And it was the same movie. And that would be Star Wars Episode 9, Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's kind of how I feel that Wonder Woman is this year.
Yep.
That is exactly what I listed as my most disappointing movie. Wonder Woman 1984.
Same. Oh, wow. I mean, it makes sense.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. We all have the same one.
It's history repeating itself.
See, we can always come together to hate the bad superhero movies.
Our tastes, what we like may be varied, but what we hate is laser focused.
Well, I think hate is a strong... Well, yeah, I guess no, Jeff
disappointed.
Hated it.
Disappointed.
Jeff hated disappointing.
It, but, I did hate it.
Jeff went on a Hulk smash moment on the podcast last week. But I think that...
I hated it because it had so much potential, right? It could have been... Great. The first one is really good. It's very entertaining and fun. I mean, I kept saying it was the movie that made me believe in the DCU. Like that was going to be a thing because of that first Wonder Woman movie. It was like, okay, they get it. They understand. They know how to make, you know, inspiring, aspirational, fun, thrilling, cool movies. And this one just shits the bed so hard. So hard.
Did you, Jeff, I sent you this video that former guest of the show Movie Bob made about what happened with Wonder Woman 1984. Did you have a chance to check that up?
I did not. I apologize.
No worries. No, you don't need to apologize. It's fine. But former / Filmcast guest Movie Bob made a video trying to understand what happened with the Steve Trevor plotline in Wonder Woman 1984, right? And I'll give away the premise of the Steve Trevor plotline in Wonder Woman 1984. But like... For those who haven't seen Wonder Woman 1984, streaming right now on HBO Max, Steve Trevor comes back, but he comes back in another dude's body, right?
Such a fucking weird choice, man.
It's a weird choice. And basically, Movie Bob, like, without any information, but he basically puts together, like, there were probably different versions of this movie. Like, Warner Brothers is so troubled as a studio, right? Like, they've just announced recently, this week, I think, that there's going to be like two versions of Batman on screen at once, right? Or not in the same movie, but there's going to be like two parallel universes of Batmans, right? And so the Warner Brothers, like DC Comics things, has been so troubled, the Snyder Cut, like all this stuff, that this movie probably went through many different versions. And there had to have been a version where that decision to make Steve Trevor in some other dude's body was more meaningful to the movie, because otherwise, why make it happen?
Makes no damn sense.
Why, like, but not only why make it happen that way, why build a set for that guy's house? Why, you know what I mean? Like, why shoot scenes at that guy's house? Like, it makes they wouldn't.
Well, and
have
the other thing that's crazy, I mean, again, a lot of points I didn't get to last week, but, and I don't need to rehash them here. One of them, though, is that. Clearly, it seems to me, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think I am. Clearly, the end of the movie was a pickup, because now all of a sudden Wonder Woman isn't a summer movie. It's a Christmas movie.
Right.
And so they have this scene in Christmas time that is the only payoff for there being this other dude is like this meeting she has of the other guy who she has already fucked. Like, she fucked that dude. And he has no idea.
Yeah, against his will. Mm.
So anyway.
It's so weird if you take any moment to think it through.
Agree. 100% agreed. And I think that there had to have been, like, and also they give the guy a job. He's an engineer, right?
Yeah.
So it's very possible that he was going to plug into the plot in a bigger way. And it just didn't work out because they're like, hey, guess what? That guy who is going to become like the main superhero in another film, we're not doing that film anymore. You know, like it feels extremely likely that there was another scenario where that guy, that decision was going to be important and it never did. So all I'm saying is not that the movie is good, but that it might be bad for reasons beyond the control of the director or the screenwriters or editors. You know what I mean? Like there might have been studio decisions. No, not really. Okay. So two other categories left. Most anticipated movie and then best movie of 2021, if distinct from that. But I have a separate movie for each one.
Yeah,
of these,
yeah, okay? Yeah.
This is now, to me, oh, by the way, the favorite movie of 2021 is to me the saddest category. Because we could just do a cut and paste of last year's episode.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. Mm-hmm. So when I said most anticipated movie of 2020 last year, the movies we listed for most anticipated movie were the following. Dune.
Yep.
Still on my list.
Top Gun 2. No Time to Die. Coming to America. and then the movies that actually did come out, Mulan and Bill and Ted movie. The Bill and Ted Face of Music.
Yeah.
And also Tenet. Okay, so all that said, what is your most anticipated movie of 20? So basically, a lot of those movies didn't come out.
So yeah, Dune is still there for me, but also we're getting a Paul Thomas Anderson movie, supposedly. So that.
What is this movie? The
It's got a temp title that I don't think is real.
Soggy Bottom, is that the
Soggy
one?
Soggy Bottom, yeah. I don't think that's actually going to be what it's called, but it stars Brandon...
Bradley Cooper.
Why can't I speak words? Jesus, Bradley Cooper. It would be awesome if it was Bradley Whitford, though.
He would be.
Anyway, I'm excited because it's him. And he makes
fantastic.
Good movies.
Yeah.
Devendra Hardwar, your most so your movie, Jeff, untitled Paul Thomas Anderson project. Devendra Hardwar, most anticipated movie of 2021.
I think my most anticipated is The Matrix 4, which is a movie we didn't even know was going to be a thing last year, right?
Yeah.
This is actually one new entry to this list. But hey, I have
coming
a couple
to streaming.
Others. Yeah, coming to streaming, exciting. But I have a couple other here too, like the things we had mentioned before: No Time to Die, Coming to America, Mission Impossible 7 is going to happen, and
that is my most anticipated right now.
Yeah,
there's going to be a Top Gun movie and a Mission Impossible movie in the same calendar year, evidently.
Yep. Which is unfortunate because I think if the same Tom Cruise action movie touches the same Tom Cruise action movie, Annihilation results.
Yeah, but the good news is he'll constantly be running from himself.
Yes. Indeed. Okay, very and Devendra, fast. Go ahead. What was that last one?
Last one's Fast and Furious 9, which is a thing that's happening. It's so wild to me that there was a trailer for that. We know John Cena's in it. Like we've been waiting years for that movie.
I don't know if that movie's going to come out. It's currently slated for April. When Universal pulled the trigger and they're like, we're delaying this year, everyone was like, wow, you're overreacting. Turns out they were smart.
Underreacting.
That's the thing. Underreacting. Like, we might not have it together by April.
Yeah.
So
no universe where we have it together by April.
Yeah. So I don't know if it'll come out in April, but it very well may come out later in the year. So we'll see.
I had a weird thought. I kind of feel bad for somebody like Daniel Craig, you know, who like gets in this like insane kick-ass shape to make a Bond movie, and then makes that Bond movie, and then theoretically we'll have to do press for that Bond movie like 2 years
and
after he made it.
He's a dad who has to chase after
like,
his kids.
You can't
now,
let yourself go. You can't show up on Colbert with a gut and be like, and then they cut to the trailer and you're walking out of the ocean with a freaking six pack that you can shave ice on. You know, it's like,
Interesting. You know, what's interesting. Who I don't feel bad for? Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
It's weird.
It's
weird. He's a
right
guy
now.
I don't feel bad for. Because
this guy's
got to
stay in shape for 2 years for no reason. That sounds horrible.
He gets to be James Bond. And he's also, by the way, somebody who really doesn't enjoy being James Bond.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
He wants to be
that's
out.
Why I picked him, is because that dude does not want to stay on the James Bond fitness regimen.
Listen, he's James Bond. He's married to Rachel Weisz. He's good. He's fine.
Yeah, I know.
He has a good life.
I'm just saying. I feel like if you go, okay, well, if you're waking up and eating no carbs for two extra years, and you're doing those freaking sit-ups for two extra years, only because you're going to be on Colbert and look like James Bond again. Ooh, that's not.
He should just have Kumail come in and be his stand-in for those.
Fucking Kumail, dude! Did you see the picture he posted on New Year's Eve?
Ridiculous. Yeah.
Well, also the terrible discourse around it too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, okay. My most anticipated Mission Impossible 7. Okay. Best movie of 2021. This is the worst category because, yeah, as Jeff indicates, not only is it a repeat of last year, but also we are terrible at predicting what our best movie of the next year will be.
We never know what's coming out.
Correct. You know? That's what makes it so fun, Jeff, is this is the category we know we're going to suck at.
The problem is, so the problem with this category always is, and I don't know if it's still the problem now, but I think maybe it is. The problem is that the only movies you know are coming out in the following year are the big summer tentpole movies.
Right.
And those are never the movies. Yeah.
Like this film festival movies that get distribution during the year, like you never know.
Nobody knew that Sound of Metal was coming out in 2020, you
know?
Correct,
correct. But Jeff, that's what makes it so fun is because it's an opportunity. It's like you're... we're like the clown at the circus that you can throw a baseball at and hopefully you fall in the dunk tank. That's basically, except you can't miss. You can't miss.
Oh, that's fun.
Last year, the movies that we listed for this category were Dune, The Eternals, and also I listed my favorite movie of 2021 as Tenet, which, to be fair, did make it into the honorable mentions for me. Didn't make it into my top 10 list, though.
Close, very close.
Close. I mean, just a good like 10, 15, 18 spots away from my favorite
movie
of 2021.
Closer than DNF, right? did not finish.
What?
That's what you get in if you didn't finish the race. They list you as a DNF.
Oh, I see. Gotcha. Devendra also shouted out The Gentleman, the Guy Ritchie film, and the Rhythm Section movies that we saw and promptly forgot.
Very bad movies.
Okay, so my choice for best movie of 2021 is going out on a limb, and I'm going to say The Matrix 4.
Ooh. Wow. I hope you're right, dude. I want it to be so good.
I want it to be good. I want it to be the best, yeah.
It's either going to be a disaster, or it's going to be like, this is incredible.
Yeah.
More likely, it's going to be like the Rogue One of The Matrix or something like that. It's going to be like, that was pretty good, and it made the previous movies better.
I think you really got to watch, Sense8 to really get a sense of what the Wachowskis are up to now. To really acclimate yourself to it. I love Sense8, but I do not think Sense8 would be a show Dave would love. You know, I remember you checked out a couple.
Can the Wachowskis redeem Matrix?
There's just one Wachowski right now. Yeah.
Okay. Well, can this film redeem Matrix 2 and 3? Like, imagine watching this film and then Matrix 2 and 3 are better. You know?
Sure. Yeah. That's the ultimate goal.
It's possible. It's happened before.
And also, I love that David Mitchell has a co-writing credit on this too.
Nice.
Like, you know,
what's it happened before too?
Yeah.
What are you
referring to? I would say Rogue One is probably falls in that category. Like you could
made
argue that
A New Hope better?
Yeah. I mean,
okay.
Yeah, you can say like,
I mean,
like,
it like cleared up one tiny line.
It cleared up this massive plot hole that has been bothering people for years.
Sure. Yeah, nobody enjoyed A New Hope until they cleared up that one weird line that they say in that one map scene.
I mean, I don't know if you guys know, like Star Wars, criminally underrated yes. film. Like
nobody's enjoyed
no
that
one talks
until
about
Rogue
it.
One came out.
No one talks about it. Yeah. No one talks about it.
You know what, though? I hope it doesn't like even try to do anything with the last movie. Like, do your own thing. Make something.
Okay.
New, please.
Here's one, Jeff. Godfather Part 2.
Made the Godfather better?
Yes.
Dude, okay.
But Godfather 1 wasn't bad, but it retroactively made Godfather 1 better.
I guess.
No, I if that's what the point you were making is that sometimes the sequel makes the previous movie better, but you're talking about movies that people did not like. Magically turning them into movies they did like.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's ever happened. That would be amazing if it did.
You've dug yourself into a Matrix Revolutions hole over here. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think you're, I mean, you know,
yeah.
I can't deny that what you're saying is true. Okay. Jeff Cannata, do you have a choice for best movie of 2021, knowing that this is a meaningless category we never get right?
I, inadvertently read the Paul Thomas Anderson movie in this for the previous category when I should have. I was saving it for this category.
I see.
But yeah, so I was going to say Dune is still my
most anticipated.
Most anticipated. And the Paul Thomas Anderson was going to be the one that I think will be the best.
All right. That's not a bad choice, dude. That's like a pretty solid bet.
If that movie is not in my top 10 list, I would consider it to be a massive failure, right? I think like
a massive failure in your part. A massive failure in your part to guess.
Well, no, I mean, I think my my expectation with Paul Thomas Anderson movies, like there's some teams that you just expect to be competing for a Super Bowl every year, you know? And that's kind of how I feel about Paul Thomas Anderson movies. Like they don't come around very often, but when they do, they're always contending for my favorite movie of the year. Or the best movie.
I don't recall you liking Phantom Thread that much, though. Did you like Phantom Thread?
Are you joking? I fucking love that movie.
Okay, never mind then.
I do not recall. But what about Inherent Vice, which is a movie I feel like
I did not like Inherent Vice.
Okay, Inherent Vice was, yeah, that was not
cool. That is the one, that is the exception that proved the rule.
Did not love it. Did not love it.
But that is the only one. That's the only one I didn't love.
Okay, Devendra Hardwar, any guesses? Your favorite movie of 2021?
I think my favorite will probably end up being Dune, like just in terms of best movie and the thing we've been anticipating. I think Villeneuve like knows. I trust in him at this point to do something high level with this like sci-fi property, and he's done so much. The dude made a Blade Runner sequel that I think is arguably better than the original. So yeah, I'll trust him on this one.
So the final thing to discuss is what we think the movie going industry is going to look like in a year. Because let me tell you, I listened to our best movies of 2019 episode, and we did not see it coming, guys.
You know, we did I just want to say
real quick, before we go too far down that road, I just pulled up the top 10 list from 2017. And number four on my list is Phantom Thread.
Okay, well, that's my bad, Jeff. I apologize. It was like me, you know, it was like you forgetting that we did a 500th episode, you know?
Yeah, except worse, way worse, though.
Is it, though? Is it worse?
Sorry, you were saying. I was busy Googling and not paying attention to what you guys were transitioning to.
Thanks, Jeff.
Number four
that
on my list. By the way, Devendra put it number six, and you didn't even put it on your list. So I liked it the most of all of us.
You showed me, Jeff. You showed me. Okay. So we didn't predict that the entire theatrical industry would be upended due to a global pandemic this year. But can we make a prediction about where we will be next year? Here's a question. By a year from today, do you think you will have gone to see a movie in a theater again?
Yes.
I think so.
I think so. I want to say
I think there is a solid chance at least one of us will be vaccinated by then.
I mean, things are going terribly now, but ideally by the middle of the year, like we can make this happen, you know?
Man, I'm sitting here in Los Angeles. It is worse than it has ever been here. One in five people who are tested are positive right now in Los Angeles. 700 people a day are taken out of their homes because they are too sick to stay at home. It is unsafe for them to stay at home and not be in a hospital. There is zero capacity in several counties in California for intensive care beds. We are so much worse today where I sit talking to you now in Los Angeles than at any point during this pandemic. I have a hard time. I mean, I want to, the rollout of the vaccination has been a complete debacle. I have a hard time. I don't want to be Mr. Doom and Gloom, but man, I have a hard time imagining myself walking across the street. I don't know if you guys know this, but I live across the street from a movie theater. It does not take much for me to get there.
Thank you for sharing that.
I'd love to make that
movie theater
safely.
Will be around a year from now. That specific movie theater, I don't know.
Yeah, AMC. It's an AMC.
Jeff,
I don't know, man.
We are wishing the best for you. Everything I've heard about LA is scary right now. And the thing is,
it's terrifying.
With hospitals full, it's not even just like you're afraid of COVID. You're afraid of any injury at all.
Mm-hmm. My right? wife told me today she would like us not to, even if we have to go anywhere, to only take surface streets. Like the idea of getting into a car accident now is even more deadly than it normally would be because there's just no ambulances. There are no, their ambulances are sitting outside of hospitals for 4 to 5 hours with COVID patients inside them waiting for beds. It is like, you cannot overstate how dire this is right now. And yet we've got these fucking assholes protesting in malls. It's just like, so I have a hard time seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. I hope we have this episode next year at this time and we're all laughing about how scared we were, and you know, obviously not laughing at this awful tragedy, human tragedy, but we're all, you know, laughing at how bleak we thought it would be, and oh my gosh, we're so happy that, you know, we got through this terrible time and we got the other side of it. I hope that's all the truth. But man, right now, sitting here on January 4th or whatever it is right now, I just fucking don't know. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. How are you feeling about things, Devendra? How are you feeling about the next year?
I mean, I think things are certainly bad and it's going to be bad for a while. But the fact that we've got two vaccines coming. We've got a completely, you know, useless administration on the way out. And we have, like, at least Biden and crew seem to be appointing people who know science and know what they're doing and can plan and deal with some of this. I think we need to be kicked into high gear in this sort of, like, you know, a time of war emergency to get these vaccines out. There are stories about people, you know, that pharmacist who deliberately destroyed hundreds of vaccines. That made me so angry. You know, I cannot think of a more immoral thing to do. And he also gave it to people to make them think that it didn't work. Because I guess when they die, that's aha, you gotcha. It is hard to be, hopeful right now, but I'm hoping that with all the changes and with these two vaccines and hopefully more coming, and there's a lot of talk about, you know, if we can make it work with a single dose, that all of a sudden, you know, halves the time and the difficulty of doing this too. So I'm trying to stay safe. I hope everyone listening stays safe, but I'm trying to be hopeful. And I think by the end of next year, I could see myself going into a theater, assuming, you know, I've been vaccinated, and I still wouldn't go in like a crowded thing. And I'll be wearing a mask outdoors, you know, in crowded areas for the foreseeable future, you know, because these vaccines aren't perfect. So there's still a lot, but yeah, maybe by the end of the year, we'll find some theater or something local. I want to keep indie theaters here alive. That's, that's what I hope to be doing.
Yeah, I feel the same way. And I'm feeling, you know, Jeff, I don't want to downplay the horror that you're living through, because it sounds really, really scary. Here in Seattle, it feels like things are somewhat under control. And I mean, I just had a potentially life-threatening experience with my blood clot last week that I was able to get treated in a way that was relatively safe. And between that and all this news, I'm feeling like a little bit hopeful for the year, you know?
I hope you're right, man. I asked my wife too. I was like, honey, we have this question we're talking about tonight. What do you think? But next year at this time, how many movies do you think I've seen in a movie theater?
Yeah.
And she goes, zero. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hope we're wrong, man. I don't want to be negative Nancy over here. You know, I really don't, but it's hard to see a way out at this point.
Yeah, I think it'll be a few. But it's not going to be like I'm hanging out with, I'm going to raves and stuff and licking
normal Dave Chen activities.
Yeah, it's not like normal Dave Chen activities, like licking random strangers and going to raves and, you know, inhaling people's particles, you know, like,
yeah,
not normal stuff.
It must have been difficult for you to give all that up.
It was pretty challenging, not going to lie. Yeah. I'm glad you're recognizing it, though. Thank you for that. That's validating.
Yeah.
Well, we hope that you are staying safe and healthy out there and that 2021 is a better year for you than 2020. And we are hoping that for all of us here on the podcast. Thanks to all of our patrons at patreon.com/filmpodcast for making this episode possible. And again, this is the last episode of The After Dark that will be posted on the main feed, at least in a fairly timely fashion. So if you want to receive more of these, patreon.com/filmpodcast. Thanks. We'll see you next week.
Hey, wait.
Okay.
I want to thank you, Dave. Because you, you know, you really do a lot of work week to week. All year long, it has been not easy to keep the ship together. You really put together the plan for the Patreon. I'm grateful for Devendra as well, and the fact that we get to keep making the show and listening to you guys with your passion and intelligence and what you bring to talking about movies is very valuable to me and something I cherish. Even the nights that I start this process in a bad mood, you know, there are plenty of times where we get on here and I've just been dealing with my kids and trying to survive another dinner and putting them to bed and crawling in front of a microphone and just the idea of transitioning between family time and this time is just it can be rough. And
I would say Jeff's mood, I would graph it in a linear upward trajectory whenever we do the podcast. So when
disgruntled. Come on,
when we're in the pre-show, sometimes Jeff is like, I'm just like, oh my gosh, Jeff, like, are you okay? Are we gonna have like a bad episode? And then by the end, Jeff is like having a blast.
Barely hanging on when we start.
That's
my
just being
kids
a parent,
have beat
Jeff.
Me down. Yeah, yeah, exactly. My kids are actively trying to destroy me. And they're succeeding 90%. And I crawl in here with 10% of myself, and you guys rejuvenate me, and I'm grateful for it. I want to say that on the record, even if it's The After Dark that nobody listens to.
I appreciate that, Jeff. And you know what? I love doing this. I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't love seeing a movie every week and coming back and talking with you guys and, you know, sharing our thoughts with our listeners. I'm glad we can still do this despite everything that's happened. It kind of makes me think we could do this no matter what happens. You know, we survived the pandemic as a podcast for now.
Well, not yet. We'll see.
Devendra is...
We'll see.
We're just poking the 2021 right now.
You're just really tempting
me. We're totally fine.
nothing bad could possibly happen to any one of us on the podcast. there were several people that pointed out, like, hey, the fact that you kept this weekly podcast going is amazing. And I'm like, I never thought of it as a massive, like, as any kind of achievement, really. But I guess, you know, when you premise your podcast about new movies coming out every week and the podcast survives, it says something good about you and your listener. So thanks to everybody who has kept this shambling corpse of a show alive. Go ahead, Jeff.
We should also thank Beatty again, who is phenomenal and wonderful and edits our show and is invaluable. So thank you, Beatty. And thank you both. And thanks to our listeners and our patrons, especially our patrons. Thank you.
Woo!
Yeah, indeed. All right. Well, we hope you've enjoyed this episode, and we'll see you soon.